having to sit here saying, I wonder could I eat another donut before he gets started? And that's what I was doing.
Shall I leave that in the intro? All right, I'm leaving that in the intro. Hello, it's James, everybody. Story time. No, it's not story time, for God's sake. It's Ask Dutch Anything 37. And I can't even bother doing the plugs. We've got books or whatever. DirtyDutchMantel@gmail.com for all your signed stuff. I've got two books. The links in the description, you know, that kind of thing. Pro Wrestling Tees. And we're on Facebook as well. Right, so last week on Friday, I said that I'd find the spreadsheet that I wrote on you of all the territories that I could find of you being involved in. So no, like, low-level indies that won't have been registered or anything like that. So, are you ready?
Yep.
Georgia, and this is in order of when you first got there. Georgia Championship Wrestling, All South Wrestling Alliance, NWA.
That was the same one.
Was it?
That was the same one. They just changed their name.
Oh, right, okay then. NWA Mid-America. That's Kentucky.
That's Nashville.
Southeastern Championship Wrestling, Knoxville.
Knoxville.
Championship Wrestling from Florida.
Tampa.
Central States.
Don't remind me. That was Kansas City.
Yes. I will remind you about that. Gulf Coast.
Yeah, that was Pensacola.
Wrestling at the Chase.
Yeah, but that wasn't a territory.
No, I know. It was like Houston or whatever, but, you know, it's big enough.
It was like St. Louis. Yeah.
So I've got this
one. But, you know, I don't remember that show.
You remember going in front of the crowds, though, don't you? You know, the
I don't remember the building or anything about it. I don't know why I don't remember that.
Like the hotel? You don't remember the hotel?
No.
I thought in Wrestling of the Chase, it was the Chase Hotel, and everyone's got it was suited and booted.
I don't think I was there. Something happened.
Okay, right.
You calling me a liar?
I will disprove you. I'll disprove you. So,
who was I against?
Oh, give me 1 second. I'll find out. 1 sec. Okay, right. I've got it. You wrestled 3 times NWA St. Louis Wrestling at the Chase TV shows. You lost to, all in 76, you lost to Akio Sato.
Yep, I hated that.
You hated it?
Yeah. Kind of.
You lost to Skip Young.
Hated it.
And you defeated Johnny Starr.
Hated that too. I hated winning and losing.
There you go. Then.
No, but I do remember the first two matches. The first one was against who?
Oh, God, I just closed the window. No, I've got it. Akio Sato. Sato.
A Japanese kid. Very good kid, and he fell in love with an American girl. I think he's still here, still in the U.S. And then Skip Young, I remember, had a bad eye. It was like you could tell that his eye had been damaged at one point. But man, he was a great, great worker. Great worker.
He was in the Orient Express, Akio Sato. Or Sato. God, there's anyway.
Either way, Sato, Sato. I think it's Sato.
It probably is Sato because just how Japanese pronounce it.
Because they flatten out their vowels.
Yes.
Sato. Say this. Sato.
Sato. Mr.
Hey,
Sato.
I swear to God, you could be confused for a native.
Yes.
Sato.
Sato.
Everything's very sharp.
Next one is NWA Mid-America. Is that just Kansas again?
Yep. Okay, now let me tell you the first three. That wasn't at the Friday night show.
Are we talking at the Chase here?
I don't know. I think we just started. I was at a TV station, as I recall.
Mm-hmm. You are. KPLR Studio. Chase Park, but it says Chase Park Plaza Hotel in St. Louis, Missouri.
It may have been off to the side. I wasn't in the big Chase Hotel. I would have remembered that.
Okay, where are we now? Memphis, of course. Well, I've got CWA here, but where's Nick Gulas' territory? Oh, is that Mid-America?
That's Mid-America.
Okay, I've got it. Next is...
Hey, they changed their names. You know, it, really, if you got $25 and two extra consonants, I'll sell you a belt. You just got to have a W in there and just any two more vowels or consonants, it doesn't matter. Something W, something, something belt. Well, and we'll get something to fit it.
I've got another NWO Mid-America here as well. Then we've got Houston, which I know isn't a territory, but it's one city thing. You were there quite a few times. NWA Big Time Wrestling.
But that didn't run a TV station. That ran on Friday night, and they did their TV on Friday night.
But it was like once a month, wasn't it? Houston, it didn't run every week, did it?
No, I think every 2 or 3 weeks, yeah.
NWA Big Time Wrestling. So where was that?
NWA Big Time. Sounds like Kansas City again.
I thought it was Detroit. But everything was big time at one point. Capital Sports, Puerto Rico, of course. All Japan Pro Wrestling, UWF.
What'd you call
Japan.
That in Puerto Rico? What? The Capital Sports.
Yeah.
Asked Carlos one time, where did Capital Sports come into it? They said, well, they like up around Washington, D.C., that's where he was. Everything was capital this and capital that. And so he just had capital in his head, so he just made it Capital Sports. And San Juan is the capital of Puerto Rico. So,
but that's what WWWF was before. It was the WWWF. It was capital something or other, wasn't it? And because
WWF, Worldwide Wrestling Federation.
Yeah, but before it was that, it was Capital Sports.
Could have been. I think they did steal something from them.
Yeah, so yeah. I figured because Gorilla Monsoon was a money man for Puerto Rico, he sort of brought that name over.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it's a theory.
He was a part owner.
Right, let's see what else we've got. All Japan, UWF, Pro Wrestling USA, of course, that we've covered before. Mid-South, Continental Championship Wrestling, which I think was Alabama.
Mid-South Continental.
No, Mid-South Pro is Mid-South Bill Watts, but Continental, yeah, CCW would have been Alabama, I think. And then Charlotte, Mid-Atlantic. Then we've got Southern Championship Wrestling, which I think was another fuller territory.
I don't know.
1988? I think that's around the right time. USWA, World Class Wrestling Association, which was Dallas. That's,
yep.
WCW Smoky Mountain, WWF, OVW, TNA, WWE, Global Force Wrestling, and Impact.
I don't know where Global Force was.
Global Force is a very nebulous term over the years.
Nebulous?
Yeah.
Pay attention, fans. We're going to learn a word here. Nebulous. What's that mean?
Let me get it. Hang on. Nebulous meaning is hazy, vague, indistinct, or confused.
Nebulous, like a nebula.
Yeah.
Like clouds.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, Global Force Wrestling has actually come back once again, but it's now Global Force Entertainment, and it's a website dedicated to Jeff Jarrett and AEW.
That's what I'm saying. That had a Global Force. Anything you see with that, it's got to have Jeff involved in it somewhere.
Oh, gold, yeah.
He loved that Global. He loved it.
Shall we get into our first question?
Let's go ahead. I thought we were in the first question.
No. That was something I promised from the last episode that we'd have a look through. Just so you've been to so many territories. So there were a few double ups, but at least 25. And you went to two Puerto Rican ones. I don't know why I didn't write that down. So, you know, there's...
Yeah, I did go to two Puerto Rican. Actually, yeah, two.
IWA as well. Right. First question from Hugh. It says, hi, Dutch and James. We all love a preposterous Hulk Hogan story, like the time he claimed that Elvis was a big fan of his, despite Hogan debuting wrestling the same year Elvis died, and 2 years before Hogan even went to Memphis. But could you react to the following? In his first big WWF title match at Survivor Series 1991, The Undertaker defeated Hulk Hogan thanks to a tombstone pile driver on a steel chair. Hogan would later tell Taker that the pile driver damaged his neck badly, which made Mark Calloway, the person, feel terrible guilt for years after the fact. Before I continue with this, let's watch it. Okay, we're back. Here it goes.
Well, I guess we're in the middle of going after Paul Bearer. Oh,
we're actually looking at the tombstone here. So, Ric Flair turns up, drops a chair on it, and look where Hulk Hogan's head is.
about 6 inches off the deal, right?
Yeah, let's have a look one more time. You could park a bus under that gap.
No kidding.
It's like all
good Rick, job, Rick.
Yeah, all Ric Flair did was damage Undertaker's knees when he did the tombstone. So, having said that, let me get rid of that. Yes. The only problem is that Hulk Hogan's head doesn't come within 2 feet of the floor, and he was just fine. Why would Hogan want to mess with Taker's mind? What's Hogan's angle here?
Well, I don't think he messed with his mind that much. I don't think if it happened, it happened. He may have felt, but he's had to have seen this somewhere. And I'm sure he's had to seen this.
No, the Undertaker,
I don't know.
The Undertaker thought, because Hulk Hogan had said that he badly damaged his neck on the tombstone.
Yeah.
And The Undertaker felt guilty for years over this until someone sent him the footage years and years after the fact. And realized Hulk Hogan had just made it up and his head was nowhere near the floor.
Hmm. Well, what year was this?
91.
Well, I wasn't around him in 91, but I talked to him on the phone several times. He never said anything about being hurting Hulk's neck or anything like that. This is all I can go by.
Why would Hulk Hogan make it up?
If he had a hurt, I don't know. I can't speak for Mark.
No, I don't mean The Undertaker. Why would Hulk Hogan make up a fake injury just to mess with The Undertaker?
I have no idea. I'm not in Hulk Hogan's mind.
Is anybody?
No. His brain is like this big and there's not a lot of room in there for a lot of people. So
there we go. I did have a couple of theories. Was it just to dent The Undertaker's confidence? Was it to have something to complain to Vince McMahon about?
I'm thinking about Ric Flair going down. What was Ric already out there, you think?
Yeah, well, I think he came out to interfere, yeah.
Where did he get the chair? From Paul Bearer?
Probably Howard Finkel or something, who knows?
Yeah, but he may have. I don't remember the setup when I was there, but he got the chair and folded it up and laid it down and he didn't even come close to it.
Mm-hmm.
But nobody in that sellout crowd of 20,000, you'd have to be very, very close to see that nebulous finish.
Do you know who Undertaker tombstoned even worse than that? Was Jake Roberts. Like the WrestleMania 92, he tombstones Jake Roberts onto like a cube of oxygen that must have been about 4 foot. His head went nowhere near anything. He was very safe. He was very safe, Undertaker.
And the tube was big.
Tube.
Where did he land?
He just landed on his knees, but somehow Jake Roberts' face was like in his crotch pretty much. You know, he was in no danger of getting hurt.
Hmm. Well, I never saw that.
Yeah. Well,
where was that at? WWE?
Yeah, 92. That was in Indianapolis,
okay.
I think.
Okay.
Right, we'll move on. Rob says, hello, Dutch and James. Love the podcast as always. Just a thought. With news that Triple H is planning to streamline the stages for future shows to allow for bigger audiences, I got thinking. I really missed the specially designed stages for pay-per-views. They really made the events feel premium. Ironic that they use the term now that they don't use them. And not just another wrestling show. Examples that spring to mind are massive. Well, you give some examples. Do you think that these elaborate stages and the spectacle they provide are worth the cost and effort, or are promotions right in going for something cheaper and more logistically viable? Thanks. So we're talking wrestling stages, because in the old day, you know, for the last 15 years, they've pretty much all been uniform, like one big LED screen, and now they're actually putting the effort in designs again.
Well, does it matter? I don't think it matters to me. I wonder why they changed it the first time, and why did they come out with that design from the beginning? So what did they put there? It was more than just a look. I'm sure it had to have some kind of value to the event or the people set there. Higher tickets? I don't know. I have no idea. But yeah, I did like it better when it was kind of cordoned off like that, because it looks different. It does not look like the same arena or the same setup in every town. So I don't have an answer for that. I'd have to be probably one of the production assistants. And if I even had an answer for that, I don't know.
David Powers says, "Hi, James, and that hairy old bastard. Fans what? Love to complain."
What did he say?
He said, "Hello, James." Can you believe that?
"And hairy old bastard." That's what he said. Okay, what's his name?
David Powers.
David, I'm going to remember that. Go ahead.
"Fans love to complain about the fictitious 14-minute headlock, but I managed to find an 8-minute headlock. Technically, a front face lock. During this match, it seems Andre was shit-faced drunk and passed out while Big John Studd had him in a front face lock." So, did you watch the video I sent you off?
I did watch it.
I mean, you didn't have to watch 8 minutes of it, obviously. But so, my question, has Dutch ever had a match with an inebriated opponent? If so, how did he handle himself, and what would he do if he was facing Andre in this match? Much love.
The question should have been, did any of my opponents have a match with an inebriated opponent? Yeah, it would have been me. Yeah, I've never been drunk, but I had been drinking. And hell, Carlos Colon was drunk every time I got in the ring with him. And, you know, I mean, they put up a stuff like that in Puerto Rico, because they walk around during the matches in Puerto Rico and they sell beer and they sell mixed drinks inside the building. And that's how they make money. And have I been drunk? Not drunk, but a little, I could feel it. Yeah, a little bit maybe. And how did you get through it? Well, you know, when you get drunk and you're young, you don't much give a crap. I probably did some crazy stuff that I wouldn't have done normally. But I never really thought about getting hurt. When you start thinking about getting hurt, that's when you get hurt. So, no, I don't remember any matches with when I was drunk. Is that what he asked?
No, opponents who were drunk that you wrestled, and how best to get through a match like that.
Slow and easy, to tell you the truth. You don't get fast. You don't tell him to hit you. And if you tell him to hit you, and just put your hands up like this, you know, look around. Oh, here it comes. Oh, God. So, and it's like you get to know these guys, how good they are, even when they're drinking. I had better matches with when they were drinking. I don't know. But if it's there, some guys are going to they're gonna drink it if it's around.
Do you remember who was?
Because back in the old days, I'd be sitting over there. It's like the first year or two in the business. I'd look over and he'd come out something and something else. And then that was liquor, not beer. Put it down. Now, used to be a guy called Crazy Luke Graham. He would take a fifth. And he had a fifth on him all the time, or the remains of a fifth. And he would pick it up and he'd go, gunk, gunk, gunk. And he'd always go, always. And put the top back on it and go back to talking or playing cards or whatever he was doing. So, and it was a bad example for a young man like me. That's what I just want to bring that up.
Next question. Brett J says, "Hey, Dutch and James. Dutch, have you ever had a gimmick go sideways like it did in the tag team match on night 2 of WrestleMania when the table collapsed when Karrion Kross was put on the table and it collapsed? So, any kind of weaponage or something like that where it's gone completely wrong in one way or another?"
Well, we put up this table up under the ring, and when it come time to get it, I wasn't going to get it, but the other guy was, and he looked under one, and I'm laying ring like the village idiot, like this, like, all right, get the table, and he went to the other side. Whoop, not there. Yep. Third side. It's got to be close for you to get it. I said, okay, it's the fourth side. And the guy looked under and I looked up and I went, where's the table? They had forgotten to put the table up under the ring. So now, and it was a pretty crucial part of the whole finish. And I forgot what we did, but whatever we did didn't involve a table. So, and then we went in the back and guess what the guy had been doing? He'd been drinking. I said, where's the table? What table? I said, the table. You're supposed to put a table up under the ring. Nobody told me a table. I said, so I don't know. What are you going to do? I just ready to get out of the town. So, yep. Crazy stuff happens like that.
I didn't think you'd go through a table. Or was that not the finish?
I've gone through tables. But I'll tell you what tables I wouldn't have gone through. You know that it's a famous piece of wrestling footage with New Jack and that guy, he choke slammed off a scaffold down below. Mm-hmm. You see that? Where he actually missed the table.
Yeah.
And went to the ropes. He hit the ropes and bounced out.
Oh, no, there's two different versions. So that's the second one where he throws Vic Grimes off the table. But the original one was in ECW. And they're both on a balcony. And they both sort of grabbing each other. And then you can almost see them go, 3, 2, 1. And then they sort of throw themselves off and they completely miss the table. And I think New Jack ended up like partially blind in one eye.
Both of them?
Both of them. Yeah, that's the first one. Then the second one's the one you're referring to.
Well, the second one I'm referring to was like in St. Louis or some big building. Might have been Philadelphia. They had a big building there. But I didn't see the... Listen, that ECW style, that hardcore style, screw that. You couldn't pay me enough money. And I've had a few hardcore matches, but if I'd had to do that on a regular basis, I'd have quit. Screw that. Because you can not only, you know, and I told you the story, the guy booked me in a hardcore match and I said, I'm not doing it. And I said, I told you not to, and you did. So I'm not doing it. You can do it. I'll put you through the hardcore stuff. I'm not doing it. He didn't like it, but there's nothing he could do. So. But next. I didn't see that one where both of them. I'm going to look for it now.
Yeah, you should do as well, because that's the one that I think Vic Grimes somehow, he doesn't leave at the same time as New Jack. So New Jack goes first and then Vic Grimes tumbles and then lands on New Jack's head. So that and then it sort of almost costs him like almost the sight.
Is that why New Jack was always mad at him later on?
Yes, it was.
Said he tried to kill him.
Basically.
Next. Well, actually, if I'd have done that to New Jack, I probably went ahead and tried to kill him then, because you know he's going to try to kill you later.
Yeah.
For even thinking it.
Next question. Richie Poos says, hi, Dutch and James. Keep up the good work.
Who? What's his name?
Richie Poos.
Okay,
Richie Poos. I love you, Poo-Poo. You make my long, boring work days painting houses pass that a little bit quicker. My question is, after watching WrestleMania recently for the first time in a good few years, when the hell did it take 3, 4, or 5 finishers to finally get a pin? Do you think it should go back to the old ways when a finisher was literally a finisher? Cheers, guys.
Well, that bothers me sometimes. But it bothers me when they kick out of the same finisher that the guy has been doing to beat people. So it's one, oh my God. And you know what pisses me off? It doesn't piss me off, but it's so stupid when they come up and they go, oh God. And they make that face like, I can't believe he kicked out. Oh, I'm thinking, God damn it. Please do something else. And then the other guy do his finisher. Then he'd do the same thing when the other guy kicks out. Oh, what the heck? crazy. And then, anyway, I did see a finish recently. Or did you ask me about it? No, you asked me about it.
Okay.
On the regular show.
Oh.
It was about the Sami Zayn heel turn on him.
Yes.
And that was classic. So if you run out of a question, we'll talk about that.
Oh, we'll never run out of questions. Oh, you worry about what was your what was your finisher back in the day? Did you ever have a finisher that Jake Roberts didn't steal?
No, he wouldn't have stole this one because he couldn't do it. My finisher was laid on my back for 3 seconds. That was my finish. I lay like 1, 2, 3. Is it over? Is it over? Okay, let's go. I was a heel, so I would do. You just didn't beat guys with finishers. That came later. Because if you just beat him with a finisher, what is to dislike about that? Did you cheat? No. Did you just beat him? Yeah. That was it. Now, unless you had outside interference or something, or pulled the tights as a one, or hit him with a gimmick, that was one. But, you know, they had finishes, but only baby faces really had them. And we never kicked out of it, ever. Because the reasoning was then the same as the reasoning is now. If you kick out of it, it's going to kill the finish. Well, it wouldn't kill the finish, but it wouldn't help it any. I would say that. I'll agree with that. But no, I never had a finish. I had I forgot what it was called now. Probably just getting beat. I've lost more matches like that. I forgot to kick out. But yeah, it was a different day in a different era.
Have you ever forgot to kick out? Is that what you said just then? Have you ever just forgotten to kick out when you were meant to?
I have. I've told fans that.
No.
They said, he beat you. I said, no, he didn't. Yeah, he did. I said, no. He said, I saw a 1, 2, 3. I said, no. Then I kicked out, right? They said, well, yeah, you did that. I said, I just forgot to kick out on 3 before 3. You didn't beat me, really. I beat myself. And I have half of them saying, yeah, you didn't beat him. You can tell fans anything and they'll believe you.
Next one. Jeremiah says, hey, James and Dutch, I was wondering if Dutch considers Uncle Zeb and Zeb Coulter the same character. And how would he describe the backstory to the character of Dirty Dutch? I like to think of them as a side-winding desperado or something that I'd love to hear Dutch's take. And if he ever took time to think about it, thanks in advance, guys. So, canon-wise, was Uncle Zebekiah related to or the same character as
Give me
Zeb
that
Coulter?
First word. Give me that first word you used.
I've already forgotten it. What did I say?
Canon-wise, canon. What?
Canon.
C-A-N-O-N?
Yeah.
What's that mean?
It means like official story arc. You know, is in WWE lore, in WWE canon, is Uncle Zebekiah the same character or related to Zeb Coulter?
Well, even in their storyline, no. Zeb Coulter the first was not related. Or he could have been related, but was never referred to as a relative of Zeb Coulter II. Zeb Coulter was, well, they were both patriots. They were both that. But we never drew any kind of official lineage between either one of them. I think Zeb I was Zebekiah Coulter, and I was just Zeb Coulter.
No, you were never Coulter. The first one, you were never Coulter in
Uncle Zebekiah. I was Uncle Zeb, period.
Yeah, Uncle Zebekiah.
That's right. That is right. I was Uncle Zeb. I hated that name. I just hated it.
Hey, I never asked you this. So where did Uncle Zebekiah come from then? Because, I mean, Zeb Coulter, I know we got it from Ann Coulter and Uncle Zebekiah, so it was like a continuation. But where did Uncle Zebekiah come from?
From the brain of Road Dogg. That's where the culture came from.
Yeah.
Now, the Uncle Zeb, I guess, came from Vince. I think when he was probably had some extracurricular activity going on in that storeroom back at Titan Towers. That's where that came from. But the Zeb Coulter, no, I think that came from Road Dogg. That one did.
So I think Road Dogg was actually with the company at the time. So in 95, when you first get there in the WWF, does someone just say, today you're Uncle Zebekiah?
No, or Vince was, told me.
Vince just went, you're Uncle Zebekiah, see you later.
Yeah. And wear your shit out there and wear that damn whatever you wear. And you're from the hills of West Virginia. And you act like, or your cousins or your nephews act like they have never seen another county, let alone another state, but they had never even seen another or been in another county. So they're very inherently stupid. And I was there to keep them from getting hoodwinked by the big city boys. And that's what I was there for. So they didn't, but we didn't last long.
Next question. Jason Willard, North Little Rock, Arkansas, says, hello, Dutch and James. Huge fan. I want to ask about a party I have heard referenced in interviews where Bruiser Brody and Jose Gonzalez attended the same party two nights prior to Brody's death with no issues. Can Dutch please confirm if there was ever a party and if parties for the talent were usual during the territory days? Thanks in advance.
In Puerto Rico?
Yeah.
No. Parties were not usual for anybody down there. You could have one if you wanted to, but guys that would come in, they wouldn't be parties. You may go to a bar or something like that, but that wasn't on a regular basis anyway. And did Bruiser Brody attend a party two nights prior to his death in San Juan? No. I don't remember him attending any parties at all. Actually, Bruiser Brody wasn't much of a party guy anyway. He would land wherever his flight was from. He would land in Puerto Rico. Somebody would pick him up, take him to his hotel or where he was spending the next two or three days. And then he would leave to eat, maybe leave to work out. But as far as leaving to have a party, never heard of anything like that. I've never attended a party in Puerto Rico for the talent. You know why? They didn't have them. It cost money to put on a party. You'd have to buy liquor or something. They wasn't even doing that. So, and I don't know where he got that information, but is for me knowing what I know, no, it wasn't. They didn't have any kind of a party. Now, what I have heard was that Bruiser Brody rode with Invader One. He rode with him the first night he was there. He rode to the town. And whether that had something to do with what happened on night two, I have no idea. And I've never confirmed that he rode with him to the town. It was like an hour and a half trip. You know, I couldn't tell you. And Invader wore a mask, so nobody would know it was him and Brody in the car anyway. But that could have had something to do with it. And I have rewritten a story, which will be in my next book. And after having, he died in 1987, I think, was
88,
it?
88, I think.
88.
Mm-hmm.
And since that time, I've had 30 some odd years to think about it. And my viewpoint now is, I think he went into that room highly intending to kill Bruiser Brody, which is what he did. So, and if you had come into that as a policeman and you're trying to piece it together, you have one locker room here with some guys in it, and then the shower room. You had to go through a door, then a door to the shower. And they were in the shower, and you heard some beating and boom and whatever. But you never saw what really happened in there. And only two guys know what happened in there, and one of them is dead. So we never would know. But I do know that when I walked by him when I was coming in, he had a little thing he was sharpening a knife on. And he walked into the room, and I've said this on every deposition I've ever taken. He went up to Brody, and I had walked outside by that time because I felt like I felt tension in the room. So I walked outside, and I was going to stay in the dugout till a little more time. And then I went to the dugout, stayed out there maybe 5 minutes, no more than 7 minutes, but a short amount of time. And then it said, I need to go. And I went back down to the tunnel. And I got closer to the dressing room and I heard a bunch of noise, like a bunch of guys talking kind of loudly. And then when I walked in, I mean, I asked one of the young bloods, I said, what happened? He said, Jose stabbed Brody. I said, what? Jose stabbed Brody. Well, it still didn't register that Jose was the invader one. Everybody in Puerto Rico is called Jose. Now, it could have been Jose, whatever. And that didn't make any sense to me till I went in and I saw Brody laying on the floor with the doctor over him. And the only blood I saw was, it was maybe here or might have been the other side. But he had been stabbed in the chest and he was bleeding quite a bit, but not on the outside. He's bleeding inside. And he laid on that floor for 45 minutes till they could get an ambulance there because a lot of people were trying to get into the matches. And if you read the story, you know exactly. And the ambush was late getting there, and then he died. That was about probably around 8 o'clock. And then by the time the ambulance got there, and I received news the next morning about, I got up about 5 o'clock because I couldn't sleep. And I got up and I asked the lady at the desk, because I had told her when I come in, any calls to Brody's room, send them through to me. I was in another room. And I didn't have any calls come through. And finally, when I went down there, the young girl, she's about 20, 21, and she was crying. And I went, what the hell happened? She says, your friend, Brody, he died. I went, what the? And then it was really early in the morning, but I go out on the streets because I don't have nobody to call. And then I think I saw Buddy Landale coming down the street. He couldn't sleep either. And he told me he heard the same thing, that Brody had died. So whether that don't have nothing to do with nothing, but this new story I'm coming out with, I think I figured it out that he fully intended to kill Bruiser Brody. Why? Nobody knows. Nobody still knows. But what was the first question, that he had attended a party? He did not attend a party.
Next question. Shannon Lush, St. John's, Newfoundland, Canada. I'm a big Willie Nelson fan and just read his autobiography, in which he briefly mentions how much he likes wrestling. What, if any, interactions did Dutch have with Willie or other country artists? Thanks.
Well, we would run across them all the time, especially in Nashville. And sometimes we'd run across Johnny Cash, lived the next house down from Jerry Jarrett in Hendersonville, Tennessee.
Who had the bigger house?
I think Jerry was right there at it. Because how Jerry had his house built, he bought all the equipment himself. And he hired his own contractor. So, and he told the contractor, get what you got to get, and what can you build this house for? And the contractor gave him all these whatever, and he built it for about half of what it was worth, really. Because he was just taking, he was just, he wasn't paying the contracting company. He was just paying a contractor. And actually, Johnny Cash, you could stand in Jerry Jarrett's front yard and look down a hill, and Johnny Cash's house was right there. Crazy, huh? Didn't even have people. I can't remember who he had come over. He had some girls, some women come over one time. And this was before a lot of them were big stars. If I thought about it a little longer, I could think of some more names.
Did you ever, maybe not country music, did you ever hear the story? I can't remember if I've told you that Jerry Lawler said he once had Sybil Shepherd round.
She's from Memphis. What, Lawler had Sybil Shepherd around.
Yeah, well, the story goes that they ate
What's
some
that
red,
mean?
well, they ate some red cabbage and taught wrestling, and then she left. It's not a great story, but you know.
That's a good story. Yeah, but she is from Memphis. And you're thinking, what would Sybil Shepherd, why would she be a fan of wrestling? Well, I don't know why anybody's a fan of wrestling, to tell you the truth. But you think somebody like Sybil Shepherd is as high up as she went, but it just has a quality about it that kind of, if you're not for women so much, but I think for men, yeah, they'll watch it.
Hey, Elvis
And
was a big fan of Hulk Hogan's, according to Hulk Hogan only.
yeah, and he died years before Hogan became, he was still damn in that other name he had. What was his name he had
Sterling
first?
Golden or something like that, or
Yeah,
Terry Boulder or something like that.
he died before he even got to Memphis.
Oh, yeah.
But Elvis, they do say, was a big fan. And when they used to run, now, well, not now, but back before they closed, they ran the Mid-South Coliseum because it seated 11,000 people. Did I ever see it sold out? Numerous times. A lot of times I saw it sold out. I can't remember the story I was telling now. Hang on, I get it.
Oh, if Elvis ever went to the Mid-South Coliseum.
Oh, he didn't go there. That's what I was getting to. Because he couldn't go. Because he couldn't just walk in the back door, people see him, and he couldn't go out and sit in the crowd. So they had a special viewing area, like we would call them deluxe, a suite now, and he'd go in there and watch it there if he wanted to see the match. So, but he knew Lawler, and he knew all of them, and big, big star. I remember where I was when Elvis died. I was in Florida. And I think he died in what year did he die in?
77,
76,
77.
77. I remember when they announced it, not on the TV, but on the radio. That's how far behind I was. So they announced it on the radio and he had died, and Memphis was just all tore up. But he made the town. But I think later on, I think probably Jerry Lawler became the most popular figure from Memphis, even surpassing Elvis, I think, because he was on that TV every week. And a lot of people that had never even heard of Elvis, they knew Jerry Lawler if they watched Monday Night Raw years ago.
I'm trying to.
Thanks.
The day after Elvis died. Hang on, the day after Elvis died, you were in. No, I've got the wrong year. I'm sorry. I'm trying to find out where you were. I think I messed up. So
I was in
Elvis died on the
Florida.
16th, and it says you were wrestling in the Fort Homer Hesterly Armory in Tampa, Florida.
Yep.
Pedro Morales defeated you that day. So it was a double
Yep.
kick in the balls then.
A double kick in the balls, right? So, but then Lawler went on to say at one time he started wearing robes out to, that's when he started wearing his robes. And he said at one time, there's only one king in Elvis. No, only one king in Memphis. and that's me. Oh my God, that telephone line to the telephone station lit up. Wanted him to apologize for saying that. Hell, he'd only been dead like a week, and he's already out making jokes. And that's when he got the crown. And when Elvis died, then I look around. Then Dundee's got the same thing. Bill Dundee, another baby face there. He's wearing his little jumpsuits out, like just like Elvis. They ripped off Elvis like hell. They just couldn't wait for him to die, so they could get it. But you know, and talk about wrestling. You know, they're not afraid to steal something. They will steal it right out in front of your nose. But that's where Lawler got it. And who said he was a big fan of Elvis?
Hogan.
No, a big fan of Hogan. No.
Not a chance.
Hulk Hogan, everybody was a fan of his.
And he's a fan of everyone's. Did you ever see that tweet he made years ago? There's a guy from Jackass called Bam Margera. And he's got a photo with him. He says, "I really miss you, brother. Rest in peace." And then Bam tweets back, "I'm still alive."
Is that tweet still around?
Yes, it's amazing. It's one of the greatest tweets of all time. That
I'm gonna miss you. Rest in peace.
Like, I'm still here. I miss you too, but I'm still kicking. Because I mentioned it before, I'm interested in it. I never realized that you wrestled Pedro Morales. Have you got any stories about him?
Well, I didn't speak Spanish. He didn't speak good English. So we went out and we did probably the intercontinental bilingual, what we can get from wrestling. Of course, arm drag, you know, you'd learn that. And, you know, hit me, he could get that. And I just went out there and we didn't try anything special. And I remember, actually, I kind of remember that match now, because I wrestled him like a whole week because they were getting him over. And to tell you the truth, I'm thinking, Pedro Morales, former champion, of WWF. Was this before he was champion?
I'm just looking that up now. Where is he? Yes, it was. He was champion from 71 to 73. You wrestled him in 77.
Yep. So I'm wrestling the former champion of WWE, three W's and an E, I'm sorry. And I guess it was okay. He was okay when he got to the restroom, shook my hand, smiled, good match, thank you, gracias, you know. And I said, quit talking that Spanish shit. God damn it. We know you from down there. We know you're a damn immigrant. But he was a nice guy. He was.
Why was he never as big a star as when he was? I mean, how can you be a bigger star? He's been WWF champion, but he just seemed to just... He's not recognized by Vince McMahon and WWE like Bruno is or Bob Backlund is. He just seems to like be a footnote in history, even though he was a big star at the time.
Well, you held it for how many years?
Two and a half, something like that.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. When did Vince take over?
Oh, I think another 10 years afterwards. Vince Jr. took over in 82.
Vince Jr. took over in 82.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know why it happened. I was going to say maybe the old man, McMahon, died. But that's not true. And I remember the day that happened. I was in Atlanta, and somebody called me, and they says, "Vince McMahon's dead." And I went, "Okay, how does that have any relevance to me?" They said, "Well, you know, his son's going to take over, Junior." I went, "I didn't know either one of them." I said, "Okay, so what's your point?" "Oh, I'm just giving you the news." I said, "Well, thank you, but." It meant actually nothing to me. But actually, in wrestling history, it meant everything. Because Vince didn't take over the company with the same mindset as his daddy. His daddy had the company, believing that WWE was one thing and all the other promoters would leave it alone. All of them. As long as, and this goes without saying, he didn't try to move into mid-Atlantic around the Carolinas and Virginia. And as long as he didn't move into Florida, you know, had a separate company there, or Georgia, or Minneapolis. Like, just stay where you are, and we'll see how it ends. We'll see how it ends up. Now, senior of McMahon, when he died, he just upset everything. And then pretty soon, everything started changing. Vince started moving on the territories. It was open warfare as far as the companies were concerned. And when they first brought the WWE in, a lot of these territories, guess what? They didn't take over right away. They brought it to Puerto Rico the first time that I remember when the old company, old Puerto Rican company, was running. I bet they had 1,500 people in that big stadium. Nobody came. Now look at it. They just got to mention WWE there and they sell out.
It's one of the most interesting bits of the early years of the national expansion is the battle for the West Coast, because LA died, San Francisco had died, or it was on the, you know, dying on the vine, essentially. So Vern Gagne and Vince McMahon are constantly going back and forth to the West Coast to try and sort of establish dominance and at their own cost as well, because neither of them, I think, were drawing big at the time.
No, nothing. West Coast is basically, it was almost dead for the companies out there then. They didn't do any big business. LA never did it.
It's like Los Angeles. That's
it. Never did it. It never did any big business. Oregon, yeah, for the size of their towns, yeah, they could sell them out every now and then. But probably the biggest arena was maybe, I don't know, what's the biggest town in damn Oregon? Portland? And building wasn't that big. So it's not like you're talking like millions of dollars. You're talking about thousands of dollars, really. And in Seattle, Seattle never was a booming territory, not from what I've heard. The wrestling business was on the East Coast and halfway across the U.S. to Texas. That's where it was good. Rest of it was a wasteland. Might as well just nothing out there but sand. And when they ran wrestling, they were just more sands being displaced. That's what it was.
Very quickly before we get off Pedro entirely, was he over in Florida after the WWF Championship run? Was he still a big star in Florida, or was he just another guy?
Just another guy, really. Yeah. And they would announce he was a former. See, announcing somebody was a former champion in WWF, it meant nothing to the people in Florida. They didn't give a shit. It's like, you know, that old joke I told you, take any two letters you want and put a W with them, then you got a wrestling company. And wrestling for Florida, you know, WF, whatever it was called. But no, only the people who read the magazines knew who in the hell he was.
We've got time for two more questions. I'll stick it to that. Mike Siegler says, what was your very last match? And was it hard to stop wrestling?
My last match, when was it?
Well, I'm asking you. I mean, it's probably WWE and you were teaming with Jack Swagger or something. But
no.
As in like a proper last match where you're actually wrestling.
No, I never had a proper last match. Nobody give a shit.
I don't mean like a retirement.
Maybe some of them would say, God, I hope so. Yeah, and say, is Dutch had his last match? And he said, God, I hope so. I don't want to watch that shit again. No, but no, it was never a proper, but I never had a place to have it anyway.
I don't mean like a retirement sort of last match, kind of like a big ceremony. But
well, when did that retirement start? 1987?
We were like Terry Funk.
From then on out, it was kind of sparse.
You sort of did. When did you semi-retire then? When did you stop wrestling full-time? Was it just when you got a booking job?
I get a booking job, and then I would try to see, did I have to wrestle then? Because wrestling's hard. You know, I wrestled and booked in Puerto Rico. Ah, damn, that was hard as hell. And I would go out there and I teach these other guys, if you don't want to do a job, watch me. I would go out there and lay on my back there. It's easier. You say to the guy, oh, I can do a job, but oh no, you're better than that. Okay, whatever. Then I just book him less and less until finally he got the hint that maybe he shouldn't have said that. And he said, Mr. Dash, Mr. Dash, Senor Dash, when I ain't going to go back and get on the cards.
Are you just doing Invader?
Well, that's what I heard. I said, well, when you learn to kind of think your question over before you said you bitching and moaning, I don't want to hear that. Nobody else wants to hear it either. So when you stop doing that, you can come back. I wasn't mean to him or nothing. I said, yeah, if you hadn't have been a problem, I'd have kept booking you. Invader was a pretty big name in Puerto Rico. Till he had the deal with Brody. And I stayed out of there, I think, for 6 or 7 years. I wouldn't go back. So then the business got so bad, I didn't have anywhere to work. So I took the booker's job over there. And then immediately I had a run-in with Invader. The referee was in the room. I said, they say, Invader, he wants to finish. I said, all right, take this to him. Go. The referee come back in 10 minutes. He said, Invader, no like finish. He was going over. No like finish. He wanted another finish. I go, God damn it. Yeah, give him the to go. Come back the third time. He said, Invader, no like that finish. He wanted another finish. I said, listen. And I had somebody interpret this for me. I said, you tell that goddamn Invader, I only had two finishes and I don't have no more. So tell him to come up with a finish and do that. So we did. So he gave his own finish. He won. It was okay. Finish. I watched it. Then I quit giving him finishes. I quit doing anything with him. Of course, if you quit giving finishes, you stop giving angles. So finally one night he sent me a message. Invader, won't you know when you're going to do an angle with him? I said, well, you tell a goddamn Invader when he's not goddamn, I should have said, when he's not damn running around killing people, I might give him something, but, and I made him ask for it. And I wish I hadn't went back, but hey, unless I went back, I didn't have work anywhere. You only had two places to work. You could make any money. And that was Atlanta. And that was in Hartford, Connecticut for Vince. Only two places. All the rest of the territories were shut down. So, and I made it hard on him too. I wouldn't have involved him in nothing at all.
To go back on the original question, I'm just looking at a list here. So we're not going to...
You said I didn't answer the question?
No, but we shall do now. So don't worry about it. We're going to discount all the WWE appearances because none of them are really proper matches. I'm going to give you the last three matches I can see on your list here on Cage Match.
Yep.
2011.
Hey, Cage Match, whatever it is, they're the shits that history. I don't know where they get this information, but it's not accurate. They never call me.
Well, I don't think they call anybody.
No, okay.
No. So, 2011, Steel Cage Match. Dutch Mantel defeats Bill Dundee at Crossfire Tribute to the Fairgrounds and the Tennessee State Fairgrounds. Do you remember this in 2011?
Did I win?
Yeah, you won.
Oh, I did?
Yeah. Do you remember it?
Still don't remember.
Okay. Your second to last match before WWE, Eric Draven and Mr. V defeat Dutch Mantel and the Texas Outlaw in Madison, Indiana. Do you remember that?
I kind of remember that for some godforsaken reason.
I'm trying to find out who the Texas Outlaw is. And the last
one. What's the name of that town?
Where was it? Madison, Indiana.
Oh, God. Horrible.
And the last one before you went to WWE, and you might remember this one. You and your partner, I'll tell you who you fought first, Gary Valiant and Tony Falk defeat... you defeated them, Dutch Mantel, and your partner, Josephus.
I kind of remember that.
Yeah. So apart from WWE, that seemed to be your last proper pro wrestling match.
And how long ago, how long were they apart?
2012 was when that happened.
All of them?
The last three, I don't know, that's within a span of a year. But you probably had more on the indies or whatever. But yeah, that was also in Nashville, Tennessee, at the Stadium Inn. You and Josephus.
You know what the Stadium Inn was?
No, it sounds like a hotel.
It sounds like it's really a crack hotel. That's what it is. Because it sits right between the interstate and downtown. There's nothing else on that strip. It's just you go in a road and the river's there, so there's nothing there. And then on the other side of the river, that's when the downtown starts. So, and it is a flea bag hotel. It's what it was. And the guy, he said, hey, I want to have wrestling. And they rented it to him for $100 a week, I guess, or whatever. And then they'd go have matches. Draw nobody. There'd be nobody there. But he still ran it.
Yep. Well, that was your last match, aside from WWE, in a flea bag hotel, teaming with Josephus, but at least you won. Defeating Tony Falk.
At least I won.
Yes.
I'm hoping to think that's not my last match, but it probably was. Yeah.
No, I'm just looking. The ones in WWE, Alberto Del Rio beats you by DQ in 45 seconds. Alberto Del Rio defeats you and Jack Swagger in 11 minutes 15. In a triple threat match, Ricardo Rodriguez defeats Biggie Langston and Zeb Coulter, which I don't have any recall of. And then on SmackDown, Alberto Del Rio and Ricardo Rodriguez defeat Big E Langston, Dolph Ziggler, and Jack Swagger, and Zeb Coulter. And Ricardo Rodriguez defeats Zeb Coulter via DQ in 1 minute 44. And your last ever match, Alberto Del Rio and Ricardo Rodriguez versus Jack Swagger and Zeb Coulter, ends in a no contest in a sizzling 1 minute 16.
Hey, we had him up, buddy. You know, we had them up, then the match started, then they all started running back because it's, hey, it's only going to go a minute, get back, and everybody run back to the seat. So it looked like chaos out there, but at least we created some stir amongst the fans.
There you go. At least it was a no-score draw. You didn't end on a loss. And on that note, we're not going to end on a loss either. Thank you very much, everybody, for watching. If you want questions.
Now, thinking of what you're saying now, end on, I'm going to book a card myself. I'm going to get in the ring. And I'm just going to have a guy stand there. He could just be a homeless guy off the street.
Dress him up like Ric Flair.
No, yeah, exactly, except it'll be better. And then I'm going to hook him in a small package. 1, 2, 3, I'm going to get up. And then my fireworks is going to go off and my little things that sparkle and all this kind of stuff. And I'll have somebody come in and give me some flowers. And so that's my last match. We can write it off like that. I don't know why, really, thinking about that, I don't know why most guys like me don't have their host their own match. I think, you know, be a couple hundred people come see me anyway. It's the last match. We're going to film it. And then I said, we're going to film it for, what would be a good thing to film it for?
OnlyFans.
I could do that, or what's that other? What's that educational channel in NPG National? It's called some National Geographic or something. Even though it's just inside of a pool room, it don't matter. But anyway, I might do that. So stay tuned for that.
Yeah, and you can also hire out the Stadium Inn for like $100. So there you go.
Oh, it's no longer there.
Well, there you go. You can host it for free on the burnt-out husk where that building used to stand.
You know what they sold that little piece of land that hotel was on?
Go on.
10 million. Jeez.
Jeez.
It's like about an acre of land.
Probably the
And
rent will
just
be
sit
up
there.
from 10 years ago now, then.
I bet it will be. I don't know what they put there. I'm sure they didn't put a hotel there, but I'm gonna check and see. All right.
Right, on that
Any
basis
more
then.
good questions?
No, I've only got bad ones, so
See,
on that
this is
basis, I'm
how
stopping.
conversations end on trips. Like, I want you to tell me the rest of that story. We're gonna be like Paul Harvey. I want you to tell me the rest of that story tomorrow. Because tomorrow, when we make a trip, now you got something to start off telling me.
Yeah, I've got three questions that I've saved for next week. So we'll save those for next week, but for now.
Okay, tell me the question that you really like the most.
The one I really like the most is fellow wrote in saying, I'm wondering if Dutch could tell us about teaming up with Frankenstein, aka Dr. Frank in Memphis. It was a four-way tag match with Schultz and that Uncle Elmer guy. Thanks. Don't answer it, though. That'll be for next week. And then we
You were going
have.
to ask me about TNA, weren't you?
No, not in this
No?
week. No. That was Dusty Rhodes. I need to ask that for next Friday's episode. So we've got Dusty Rhodes. We've got Dr. Frankenstein, the monster, or Dr. Frank. That's weird. It's Frankenstein. Anyway, whatever. If nothing else, I'm really hungry. I have to go.
All
So
right, take
I'm going to do
off.
it. Right. Thank you very much for watching questionsfordutch@gmail.com. If you want your email read out to the Dutchman himself, but for now, we'll catch you again on Friday. Dutch with the people.
We the people.